Hello, everybody. Welcome to episode 794 of the Comic Source Podcast. I'm your host, Jace.
I'm Manny.
This is our WonderCon wrap-up episode. Manny and I recently spent the weekend in Anaheim, California. Weather was great. Convention was even better. And it was a whole lot of fun. But, you know, as we record this, it's Wednesday, April 3rd. I have still not recovered. I am so tired by the afternoon. And I know first world problems, but by like mid-afternoon at work, I'm like falling asleep at my desk, man. It's like I, you know, trying to get caught up, you know, didn't get much sleep over the weekend. And then I left Anaheim at like 8:45-ish, and I drove through the night to get home so I could be here to go to work the next day. And I stopped once and slept for about an hour. And then I got here about 3:45. So it took me about 7 hours, which is about an hour, maybe 90 minutes longer than it should. But again, I did sleep for, you know, part of the hour, and I stopped and got gas. So it took me right about the amount of time it should. And of course, there wasn't much traffic because it was the middle of the night. But man, was I tired. I didn't want to pull over again and sleep more because, first of all, I needed to get here. And second of all, I just knew that it would make me more tired. I was just anxious to get home, right? So after I got back on the road, after stopping the first time, after about an hour, I was listening to a podcast. I turned off the podcast and I put on like songs that I knew, like classic rock. And I was just singing like at the top of my lungs, just to try to keep myself awake. It worked though. It really worked. But yeah, I am not recovered. I am still super tired. So how was your trip home?
Terrible. Because I decided to stay late to have dinner with everyone, I didn't get on the train back to the Central Valley till about 11. And then there was a connecting bus that took me to Bakersfield. Then there was another train. So I made it just in time to go home, change, and go to work.
But you got to sleep on the train, right?
It was not. No, I was actually I spent the 2 hours that I was, or yeah, about 2 hour or two that I was on from Anaheim to LA, transcribing stuff. And then I slept for 2 hours on the bus because it was the most uncomfortable, bus I've been in. Cause it wasn't one of their buses. It was I guess something broke or something. So they had brought some random other bus to take us. And it was so uncomfortable.
They just carjacked some guy on the streets of LA. Hey, give us your van. We need to bus these people to Bakersfield.
It seemed like that way. Yeah. And then, so by the time I got to Bakersfield and everything, I think I may have dozed off for like 45 minutes, but I was awake. And yeah, and then I was awake all day. And funny story is, so I had Emma in the evening, so we had to hang out. And then, by the time I went to actually do some work, I actually fell asleep on my keyboard.
Yeah, I was like that too. It's like, man, I need to get these episodes out, and got all this content from WonderCon that I still haven't put much of it out. And you know, it's just because like tired, right? Like, trying to get stuff done, it makes it tough. And again, it's first world problems. We had a great – it just goes to show like the thing that I always tell myself I'm going to do when these big conventions roll around is, man, get all my content up like early so I don't have to – you know, like I should have had Friday's episode, Saturday's episode, Sunday's episode, Monday's episode. I should have had all those episodes like up and scheduled before I even left. But you know, I've been behind, so I've been struggling to catch up, and – it just didn't happen. So anyway, we're going to talk about some of the things we did, some of the people we saw, panels we attended, interviews we conducted. But before we get into that, I wanted to talk to you about the sponsor for this episode. It's brought to you by Novo Real, a graphic novel Kickstarter. A legendary samurai joins forces with a superheroine, a Viking, and a Lovecraftian demon to save their respective universes. The Kickstarter for this amazing story is going on right now. There's only 4 days left. So there's not a lot of time to waste. So when you go check out the project on Kickstarter, you can see art from the story, character designs and descriptions, plus a story synopsis. There are a lot of intriguing concepts kind of rolled into this action-packed story. And when I went and kicked it out, checked it out, I was very impressed, right? So just to give you an idea of the story, humanity's trying to save themselves from the brink of extinction, and these scientists decide the way to do that is to find a different reality. So if this reality ends, they can kind of move everybody to a parallel reality. And they're successful in finding these parallel realities, but what happens when those realities begin to clash with each other, right? It's not, you know, nobody wants all these refugees kind of thing. And so, as I said, it's really intriguing. When you go to the Kickstarter page, they have a lot of the characters and descriptions, and it gives you an idea of the story that's going to be told. It's very fleshed out, a lot of detail, and it seems like it could be a whole comic book series, not just a graphic novel. So that has me excited as well. So I don't want to give away too much, because I want you to go and discover the concepts and the art and the overall feel of the project yourself by going and checking out the Nova Real Kickstarter project. However, I do want to talk about the art just for a second, because it looks very clean and polished. And, you know, a lot of times on these Kickstarters, the art, you know, they'll have a great story idea, but the art will be a little less than the quality we're used to seeing in, like, a comic from the big two or an independent. But I was really impressed. I kept trying to put my finger on who the art reminded me of, and I didn't come up with anything, but it just the style of art and kind of the tone did remind me of somebody, but I just couldn't put my finger on it. But as I said, very clean lines. I thought the transitions from panel to panel were done very well. The pages that are on there aren't lettered, but you still got a good idea of what was happening, so that indicates good storytelling in the art. So look for the link in the show notes, or you can just go to Kickstarter and search for Nova Real. It's NovereAl. For about $15, you can get a digital copy of the story. For about $36, you get a hard copy of the story and a digital copy. If you pledge about $62, you can get the graphic novel, the digital, and you get an art book filled with some really cool Nova Real images. And the reason I'm saying about is because these are actually some creators from Mexico. So the Kickstarter is in pesos. So it translates to about a peso is worth about 0.52 US dollars, so about 50 cents. So that's why I'm saying about. Anyway, for you inspiring creators, there's one final tier that I wanted to mention where you can design your own character, whether that be visually or come up with the story of your character, and that character will appear in the story. So if you're just a writer and you create this character and you want to appear in the story, the artists that work on Nova Real will work with you to develop the visual look and style and how it looks. If you're an artist, then you can do all that stuff yourself, but there is a tier available for that. So as I mentioned, there's only 4 days to go, so there's not a whole lot of time, and they're about 2/3 funded. As of this recording, I pledged myself. I thought it sounded really, really great. And again, the quality of art really, really impressed me. So yeah, go and check it out. I know I sent you over there, Manny. What did you think when you took a look at it?
I thought it was a really, really well put together presentation. First thing, you already talked about the art. I thought it was done really, really well for, you know, for a Kickstarter presentation. So it's obviously drew me in, more interested in learning about the characters, and then just you learn so much about the premise of the book that kind of draws you in. I was gonna say suckers you in, but that's the wrong term. That's not what I want to use. It you know, it does good marketing, let's put it that way. So what I didn't realize is that it was in pesos. So thank you for clearing that up, because I was like, that's kind of expensive for the darn thing. And so now that I look at it, I'm like, oh, okay. So yeah, I'll be pledging on this a little bit.
Yeah, it's so not.
I can get my hands on that.
Yeah, it's not $300 for the digital copy. It's 300 pesos, which is like, yeah, $15 for digital copy. So yeah, plus it's, you know, Hispanic creators, so I thought you'd definitely be interested. So
oh yeah,
I hope it gets funded. You know, the way Kickstarter works is you pledge, and this is one of those all or nothing campaigns, so if it doesn't get funded, then they don't get to make it. So hopefully it does. If not, you know, maybe they'll reach out to us sooner and we can help them spread the word, instead of, you know, reaching out to us when there's only you know, less than a week left. So
right.
I do encourage you guys to go and check it out. It might not be for you, or you might not have the money to spend, but at least go and look, because as I said, looking on Kickstarter, checking it out is free. And even if you can't pledge, even if it's not in your budget, you can at least get on social media and talk about it and encourage others to go and check it out. And hopefully for these creators, it'll be kind of a big push for them right at the end here as we're getting down to the nitty gritty. So, all right. WonderCon 2019. I guess let's start with our kind of overall feelings for the show. I have mixed feelings for this show. On the one hand, this has always been kind of one of my favorite shows because it does have somewhat of a little bit of a like San Diego Comic-Con feel, not to that extent, but a little bit. It's, you know, Comic-Con light, if you will, because there's a little bit of TV, there's a little bit of movie, there's a little bit of comic, there's a lot of cosplay, and Artist Alley has a similar feel. And you know, it's in Southern California, so that helps as well. But for the last few years, the quality of talent in Artist Alley, I shouldn't say quality, the quantity of known working professionals, the people in Artist Alley who are actually actively working in comics, whether that be for the Big Two or Image or Dark Horse or whatever, it's gone down. It's not as prestigious as it once was in terms of having a bunch of name creators. And I think part of that is just the proliferation of comic conventions, right? There were several creators that were there that had run what I call the gauntlet. So they 3 weeks ago were in Emerald City, Seattle Emerald City Comic-Con. 2 weeks ago, they were in Chicago for C2E2. And then this last week, they're in Anaheim for WonderCon. So if you do two of those, you know, you're tired, right? Like if you did Emerald City and you did C2E2, you may just skip Anaheim altogether. Or the other thing is now there's more competition. Planet Comic-Con in Kansas City, which I hear is an absolutely incredible comic-centric show, much more so than WonderCon, was also held on the same weekend. And so you had creators there like Jimmy Palmiotti and Amanda Connor, rather than coming to Anaheim for WonderCon, they were in Kansas City. So it's a little bit of a different feel. And then the other part of it is, So Friday was kind of slow on the show floor. I talked to a few retailer friends of mine, and they were like, yeah, I don't, like, supposedly it's sold out, but I just don't understand where the people are. And it didn't feel crowded Friday, like, at all. In fact, I would say the convention rarely felt crowded at any time during the weekend, even though it sold out on Friday and Saturday. And that might have been because I didn't walk around on the show floor, like, a ton, as far as just going up and down the aisles in the retail area. But yeah, be that as it may, it didn't feel like it was very busy at all on Friday, which is good for us people that are walking around trying to get places, but not so good for the retailers and the people trying to sell stuff. So I did talk to a few friends in Artist Alley on Sunday afternoon and asked them, you know, how did it go? And they're kind of shaking their heads, you know, not real great, you know, in terms of, you know, somebody that's there doing commissions, you know, trying to sell prints. It just wasn't, you know, a great show for that. They were, one of the creators I talked to was lamenting the fact that he wishes he would have done like some kind of an exclusive, so that maybe for Batman's 80th. So, you know, it would have been only for that show. It might've drummed up some interest. And, he also was kind of, he submitted or somebody on his behalf, somebody wanted him to do an exclusive retail variant for Detective 1000, and it got rejected by DC for some reason. And you know, if he'd have had that there, he could have sold that and done really well. So yeah, it's interesting. I saw a lot of people that were lined up for, you know, Snyder and Capullo and Tom King and that section of guys, but I think the lesser known, you know, the guys just on the fringe didn't do so great. So not sure how I feel about that. You know, again, it just didn't seem like there was a lot of people there spending money. So from that perspective, maybe not a great show. Maybe it's suffering a little bit. In terms of, Like personally, again, not as many creators there who I like to see and hang out with as I would have liked, because obviously I love to see everybody when I go to a show. But the thing is, maybe more so than ever at this show, Manny and I really spent like quality time with these people who have become our friends, right? So maybe it wasn't a vast quantity of people we hung out with, but the people we did hang out with, we spent a significant amount of time with them and just talked comics and talked life. And from that perspective, for me, it was a really, really great show. Overall, I think it was great. As far as for the show itself, the Comic Source show, it was successful. You know, we gave away the iPads full of comics, and that was a really fun experience. I was thinking that maybe we would do it here or there once in a while, maybe not to the same extent, you know, maybe not to the same quantity, but I don't know. I don't know if we're going to do it again or not, just because as great as it was, it did kind of take away my time from being able to do other things. And I also feel like people were trying to chase me down instead of enjoying the convention like maybe they should have, because they thought, you know, with stars in our eyes, ooh, free iPad. And I'm not really there to try to take attention away from creators or artists or things like that. So if we can find a way to maybe do it a little bit differently, we'll probably return to it. But at this point, I'm not sure. But I know the people that won the iPads are really glad that that we did it. So those are kind of my initial thoughts on the show. I'll talk more about the people we saw and the things we did in a second here, but I want to give Manny a chance to give his overall impressions of WonderCon. I think it's probably still his favorite show of the year.
Oh yeah, to this date, that is still my favorite show of the year. I mean, lots of firsts there. You know, my first convention just that many years ago. That's where I got my Facebook sketch. That's where I got my first sketch period with Jesse Toves. And lots of my daughter's first convention also. And you know, this year just a bunch of firsts again, but it was something I was reflecting on as I was coming back, just how much growth. I think I was telling you this, how I've grown from that guy with the stupid mushroom hat, just running from aisle to aisle, being awed by everything, to be, you know, being part of that con community that you get to see certain people multiple times a year. You build relationships. And in my specific case, I'm really starting to build relationships with other members of the press who have really helped me out also in getting my feet wet with roundtables and panels and getting to know the proper people in marketing to be able to get that kind of access. And I think this, more than anything, I was able to do a lot more this convention. And then also I learned a lot about how more or less how that aspect of it works. And, you know, made a couple new friends and saw a couple of old friends, a lot of old friends. So, I mean, it's a good time. I just wish that maybe we take Monday off also, right after that Sunday. It's like no work Monday, because Jesus Christ, that is, you know, there's a lot. So, it's always my favorite show, though. The only thing I can definitely second what you were saying about Artist Alley. I was walking up and down with Tim on Saturday for a few minutes. I had a few minutes and I wanted to drop off my sketchbook with somebody else. And I had a price range that I wanted it to kind of, because I had already gotten one from David Barron the day before. And I didn't really find anybody that I, you know, said, yes, you're next on my sketchbook. So, it was an interesting Artist Alley, and I know that there's some, just in general for comics, it seems like sometimes other mediums are starting to take over a little bit more and more to some of these bigger shows. But, still a super enjoyable show, and, I'll see where we, where we go with this conversation.
Yeah, you should have maybe tried Jeff Pena, the guy who's going to do that one for me. I think he's relative. He was probably in that price range.
No, you're probably right. And I think you did mention him.
Yeah. All right, where to start here? I could do a few different things. Well, you know, let me talk about shopping-wise, first of all. I think WonderCon is a good shopping show. I actually, for the first time there, noticed like a lot of dollar boxes and even like $3 for $1 boxes, which I normally haven't seen there before. But there's a good variety. They had a lot of really quality books there, including the highest known graded copy of All-Star Comics 3, which is the first appearance of Wonder Woman. It's a 9.6, and it could be yours for the low, low price of $1.2 million. So needless to say, I didn't pick that up. In fact, I didn't get to really go back issue diving like normally I do. I don't know why, because here's the thing. I did less interviews at the show than I normally do, but at the same time, I feel like I had less time. Because usually on Sunday, you know, I'll spend a couple hours and I'll go to a lot of the dealers and I'll look around and I'll find something, right? Like I usually have a list of things that I'm going to go in and look for. I kind of wanted, just based on the fact that I had just read the new Dial H for Hero by Sam Humphries, who I got to chat with at the show about how great it is, and also about how amazing his Blackbird title is, with Jen Bartel, who was also there, who I also got to meet, who I've met before, but got a chance to talk to. But yeah, I was like, man, maybe I should look for the first appearance of Dial H for Hero. That would be something. Yeah, never look for it. And then I had another list. I had a list of a few different things that I wanted to look for. Usually when I go to a show, I always pick up one or two Action Comics that I don't have. Yeah, I didn't do that. I didn't have time to really kind of wander the floor and just dive through and look for deals, or even like look at people's wall books or anything. It just, the way the convention was set up for me with, a panel here, a panel there. I never really had that much time. I could have made the time, but when I had free time, what I did was I spent it talking to creators. You know, hey, when are you going to come on the show next? Hey, it's good to see you. Hey, what are you up to? That's really what I did, like the vast majority of the time, at least on Saturday and Sunday. Friday, I went around with our friend Tim, who's an aspiring creator himself, and introduce him to a lot of different creators, and just to help him try to get his foot in the door. So that was a rewarding experience in and of itself. So yeah, shopping wise, the other thing, I've been wanting to increase my Superman statue collection from the number it's at now, which is 0. So, and again, I just didn't, I did see a few Superman statues there, and based on the prices, they were almost at a price I was willing to pay, but the problem was that I haven't shopped around enough, and I didn't get to shop around enough at the show. Like I basically went to two places, and one of them I felt the prices were really high, and the other one it was like, oh, these prices are okay, but unless I've shopped around and I've looked online, you know, check Amazon, check eBay, like am I paying a premium here? Am I not? And so, it's just kind of the way I am when I make purchases like that. I want to get a good deal. I don't want to, you know, be throwing money away. And so unless I've kind of done some research and I know it's a good price, or even if it's not a good price, but I know, okay, this is, you know, it's available cheaper online by like $5 or $10, but at least I have that knowledge and I can make an informed decision rather than just, oh, let me pull the trigger on this statue. And then I find out later I paid, you know, 30% markup or something. I'm just not comfortable. Things like that will bother me. And so, I didn't end up pulling the trigger on that. And I feel like it was a good decision, because again, I didn't find a Superman statue that I really, really loved either. There were some that were okay or even better than average, but none of them that really grabbed me to where I was like, yeah, I'll feel okay about spending this much money. Even if I find out I paid a premium because I love this statue so much. So didn't happen yet, but it will. I'll maybe at the next show I go to. Not sure even what show that will be. But I came home Monday and I looked for online for about 10 minutes and saw that, yeah, I would have paid a little bit of a premium if I'd have got it at the show. But of course, you don't have to pay shipping most of the time. So it may have been a trade-off there. But yeah, I feel like it's a good shopping show. The comics I did buy, actually I bought for you guys, for you listeners. I bought an Animosity foil cover volume 1. And I got it signed by Marguerite Bennett. So we'll be giving that away at some point. I also got a sampler from the DC booth that they were giving out for free that I had signed by Scott Snyder and Greg Capullo that we'll be giving away. And also I got Scott and Greg to sign two copies of Metal issue 1, DC Dark Knights Metal issue 1, that will be given away at some point. Also probably give those three things away when their Batman Last Night on Earth series hit stands, and I'll talk a little more about that in a little bit. So yeah, that's kind of what I bought. When I bought stuff, it was to get it signed so that I could give it away. So I did buy the latest issue of Hex 11 from the girls over at Hex Comics. So excited to check that out. And I'm trying to think, bought something for my daughter. Unfortunately, I didn't have the one my wife wanted, but I got my daughter a little drawing of Hermione that she, because they're both big Harry Potter fans. And my wife wanted Ginny Weasley, but they didn't have it. So I think other than that, I think that's about it. I bought the latest edition of the Comic Book Chronicles from Tomorrow's Publishing, which is an incredible resource, and historians of the comic industry and comic books as a medium, and their latest hardcover of this comic book, American Comic Book Chronicles, it's called. And they're great books that, again, have just a lot of information about certain periods of comics. And this one was the 90s. So I can't wait to read that and take a trip down memory lane with how crazy the 90s were. So I'm looking over to see if I... Oops, sorry about that. Bumped my headphones into the mic. Trying to see if I picked up anything else. I think that's it, except for I did spend money on a commission, which is now the favorite commission of mine that I own, bar none. And it's... I don't, if you follow on social media, you've seen it already, because posted it a few times, but it's Superman brushing Lex Luthor's teeth. And it's absolutely as crazy and amazing as it sounds. And just to give you a little backstory, a few weeks ago, Tom King was tweeting out about, you know, things I have to think about at my day job. Does Superman brush his teeth? And you can imagine, you know, between the number of followers that Tom King has and the craziness and loneliness with which comic creators, especially writers, normally exist, they're happy to jump on and be snarky and make jokes when it's a question like this. And that's exactly what happened. Everybody kind of jumped on and they were talking about it. And 98% of the responses were pretty jokey, including Kieran Gillen, who said Superman brushes everyone's teeth. And Tom King's response to that was, oh, well, that's why Lex hates him so much. And so for whatever reason, when I saw that, it just really made me want to start a new sketchbook of Superman brushing different people's teeth. And so I wanted to start off with Lex Luthor for the obvious reason. And a couple days before the show on Twitter, I saw Miguel Mendonca, who is an artist who I think is amazing, talk about that he's going to be in the United States for the first time. He's going to be at WonderCon. He wasn't tabling, but if anybody wanted a commission to reach out to him. So I did. I met up with him Friday. Super nice guy, super talented, very friendly. Told him what I wanted. Now, he had asked me which character I wanted, and I said Superman. And I was getting, you know, a color commission. And he said, you know, for full color, one character was $130. So I meet up with him, and he had a couple Supermans with him that were really – I don't even know which one I would have chosen. Like, the one with Superman in the clouds is really cool. There's another one where Superman's costume is literally being torn away from his body. And you can see that the S isn't just an emblem on his chest, but also a scar underneath that. So that one was awesome, too. But I didn't want to get one of those because I wanted, you know, the Superman brushing Lex Luthor's teeth. But, you know, I wasn't going to take advantage of Miguel and expect that full body. So he just did basically from like, you know, basically busts. And it was two characters, and, you know, he charged me the same, but I ended up giving him more because it was so amazing. So yeah, I met up with him on Sunday and got it. And I was so overwhelmed when I saw this commission. Like I was like speechless. Like I had like tears in my eyes. It was so, I was just so overwhelmed. I like jumped on him, gave him a big hug and everything. And we were both like smiling. And, yeah, we left that convention as like the best of friends. Like Miguel, is just an amazing artist, super talented, wonderful guy. He had a really great show as well. And then, he reached out to me on social media today, and told me he had meetings on Monday at the Burbank offices of DC. And, he reached out to let me know that those went really, really well for him. So, couldn't happen to a nicer guy. And that by far was what really made my show in terms of like anything I bought or anything like strictly comic book wise, you know, anything that didn't have to do with basically hanging out with people. If you remove that, like spending quality time with friends, then my favorite part about the show was that, that commission and just, I mean, the color work, the composition, the expression on Superman's face, on Lex's face. It's just, yeah, it is an incredible, incredible commission. So, what about you, Manny? Did you do any shopping at all?
I didn't really have time to shop at all. I bought a Shazam shirt that I wanted from the graffiti booth and bought my daughter a shirt as well. And that's about it, maybe. Oh, no, I bought a Lex Luthor statue on my way out because it was $35. Yeah. And it was really good quality. Yeah. And I think I'm going to start buying this type of statues a couple more because I really like them. They're shiny. I think they're called Kabuto.
Ooh. Yeah, I think it's Kotobuyo or Kotobuko. Yeah, they have a big booth in San Diego every year. Yeah, their stuff's really high quality. And yeah, I mean, I feel the same way. Like I wanted to get the Superman one of that, but it was 50, and I just didn't know if that was a good price or not. So,
well, they're usually when I see them, I think they're like 65. But I mean, the box of the Lex that I bought was really wonky, and I'm gonna take it out of the box anyway. I take all my statues out, so that it didn't matter if the box was in good shape or not. But I didn't know about these statues is that they don't, a lot of the ones that I have. Maybe it's because they're less expensive and I don't shell out that much cash for statues because, you know, life. These ones don't have any pegs at the bottom for the base. They have magnets. It's pretty freaking cool.
Yeah, it's Kotobukiya. Kotobukiya. Yeah, and they make toys and statues. And yeah, their stuff is really high quality. I would say, like them and Sideshow are kind of the two that I know of. Like, but I mean, I really like their stuff. But then there's also be something to be said for the stuff that comes out from like DC, like the official DC stuff. Only because the reason I like those is it's like they're based on certain artists, right? So it's like this is how Jim Lee draws Superman. This is how Darwin Cook draws Superman. So that's kind of cool because then you get, you know, it's actually a creator in the comics, and if you're a fan of one of them. And then the other thing, they don't do these for Superman, but they do them for Batman. It's the Batman black and white ones. They've had a ton of artists do their version of Batman black and white, from Lee Bermejo to Nicholas Scott, Jim Lee, obviously. Greg Capullo has several. So those are kind of cool, too. I wish there were more Supermans to choose from. There's a really cool Cully Hamner one that I'd like to get my hands on. Darwin Cook is the one I almost bought there, but the box was ripped. And as much as I take it out too, like Manny said, so box kind of doesn't matter. At the same time, it's like, well, I'm not purposely going to buy one that's with a ripped box, but that's all he had was the one with the ripped box. And he wasn't giving a discount for the box. You know, he still wanted the full like $60 for it. So yeah, I just didn't pull the trigger. Didn't you also get a foil Shazam?
Oh yeah. Yeah, I got whatever that one was. The cover was just really cool. I have it right here up on my mantle.
Yeah, issue 4. So What else about the show do you want to let everybody know?
I don't know. Do you want to dive into interviews? Do you want to dive into panels? Which way you want to go?
Either one.
Okay. Well, the panel side of it, Friday, I didn't really get, well, I guess panels and interviews, cause they're going to go hand in hand. So I had the awesome opportunity to sit with, the cast of, some of the cast of Dark Phoenix, which completely caught me off guard. So I had the chance to talk with Sophie Turner, Nicholas Hoult, Ty Sheridan, Alexander Shipp, Evan Peters, Cody McPhee, and then also the director, Simon Kinberg, and then Hutch Parker, the producer. So it was pretty cool because it was a really intimate roundtable. There was only one in the room. So it was only like six or seven total reporters, and then everybody else was on the line. And so we got to learn quite a bit about the movie and kind of what their thoughts was going forward with the whole Fox and Disney merger and if there's any plans going forward. And then at the panel, we got, roadshows right after, we got to see some pretty cool footage of, X-Men going into space. And then a little bit later, their confrontation after the X-Men pretty much have split up, divided due to the controversy of Dark Phoenix and some of the actions that were taken. I've been revealed in the trailer, but I know a lot of people don't like watching trailers, so I'm not going to talk about it. And then what was cool is they were really adamant about the fact that they wanted to do this movie, especially Kinberg talked about how he felt like they did Dark Phoenix Saga by Chris Caramano a disservice when they put it in X-Men The Last Stand, how it was more of a backstory rather than the actual part of the story. And so with the events of X-Men Days of Future Past and them kind of, you know, resetting the universe and kind of almost like a soft reboot in a way, he was able to finally get to tell the story that he wanted, which was the Dark Phoenix story, but he couldn't just throw that at his audiences. He had to have an opportunity for them to get to know the new X-Men, which is this current cast. And because of that, that's the decision was made to make X-Men Apocalypse. And then it was going to lead to the culmination of the saga, which was the Dark Phoenix movie. And which is also the reason why they chose to not call it X-Men Dark Phoenix, to just call it Dark Phoenix, because this is what it is. And he used a lot of examples from Logan, because that's kind of what he sees it as that end point. And, you know, does he want to make more movies? He would love to. But as far as if it doesn't happen, if he doesn't get to make another X-Men movie or choose to go another route, or if he loses his actors and actresses, which he really believes he was after this film, at least he can be happy with the fact that he was able to tell the complete story that he wanted to tell. So that was good. And then the next day on Saturday, one of my favorite studios, it's Lakia Studios. They do films like my daughter's favorite movie, Coraline, Box Trolls, Kubo, and Two Strings, Paranorman. And this year, actually very soon, they'll be releasing Missing Link, starring Hugh Jackman, Zoe Saldana, and Zach Galifianakis. So got another roundtable, got to talk to the director, one of the puppeteers, producers, and one of the designers for that film. And that was really, really good. But really well. Chris Butler is the name of the director. Nelson Laurie is the production designer. The head of production, Ariane Suttner, and then the public fabrication supervisor, John Carney. So Jason and I both at Comic-Con had the opportunity to go to their press event. It was their activation, but this was only for press, so we had the chance to see how their puppets all work, see how their sets work, then also we had the opportunity to see for the first time that Missing Link character. So this was a little bit more intimate, a little bit more learning about Susan, as he's called, and about the movie and the direction they want to take for a future film. Some interesting stuff that I'll be posting up a little bit later. Panel was pretty good. I'm trying to go quickly because I know there's a lot. DC Publishers panel is always great. Dan Didio, Jim Lee talk about comics. And probably my what I can take away most from that panel was how they're trying to really capture viewers of all ages with DC Zoom, DC Inc., and then you have kind of Walmart titles for new readers that they're trying to capture. Then you have your regular titles. Then you have the DC Black Label, which for a while we thought was disappearing, but from what I understand at the panel, that's not going anywhere. Titles like the second part of White Knight, and then also have the Batman story that I think Jason's going to talk to a little bit more because he went to a panel where they elaborate on that a little bit more. Superman book, Year One. It's going to come out Frank Miller, John Romita Jr., and things like that. So super good conversation pretty much that they had with everyone. It actually, like, it's weird because it's in the biggest room that they have for a panel besides the arena. But like with those two guys, it felt really intimate. It felt like, you know, you're almost like sitting at a table with them. I don't know. Maybe it's just, they're just so comfortable with people and it was pretty good, pretty cool. And then let me see what, right after that is the can't miss panel of the show, which was the, Batman's birthday panel. And this one, I mean, it had a variety of voice actors, and David Mazouz from Gotham, playing Bruce Wayne, was there. Jim Lee was on that panel as well. Kevin Conroy. I can't remember some of the names off the top of my head right now.
Lee Merriweather.
Two of the latest voice actors for Batman. One is the voice actor for Batman in Batman, The Brave and the Bold. And then the other one who voices him in Dark Knight, the video game. Super cool. They had a big giant cake, and then they gave away cupcakes to everyone to commemorate the event. And then not to mention, little bat signals for everyone. And pretty much everybody gave their Batman origin stories, where they got started, and just like that favorite moments and what that character means to them. So it was a decent panel. It was a full house, I will say that. I had to go out to get a press pass for another thing later. And when I tried to get back in, Jesus Christ, that line was ridiculous. There was no way that room was going to hold that many people. So unfortunately, a lot of people didn't get in. But that's why I got to go to the publisher's panel, because it was right before. You could have learned a lot more about DC also. The Warner Brothers panel, which was a little bit later, was actually a really good show. I don't know if you remember, because two or three years ago, Chase, you were ridiculously sick at that panel, at the Warner Brothers panel, but I was very upset with the fact that I was in there to see Wonder Woman, and I ended up with half an hour of, like, Annabelle, which was not fun. I'm not what I wanted to be doing for 15, 20 minutes watching footage of a terrifying movie.
Man, it was especially way longer than that. I feel like the majority of the panel was Annabelle, and we only got a little tiny bit of Wonder Woman. But
like, right, said, that's what I mean. And so, like, what I tell people that they don't understand is that we get to sit closer up than people in the arena. So the screen is like right there in front of your face, and so are all those massive speakers. So everything is like in your face. So like scare moments and like those thrilling moments that they want to show you to kind of capture your attention, they're like right there, and it is not a fun place to be at. But that said, Annabelle Comes Home looks like a fantastic movie. It's kind of a I can describe it the same way as a really messed up version of Night at the Museum, where a babysitter watching the Warren's daughter opens the case, somehow gets down to the room, opens the case, and she starts messing with them. Then we got some really, really cool footage of from Godzilla King of the Monsters, which featured the rise of King Ghidorah, which was, oh my God. Like, I'm a big fan of classic Godzilla films. So I've always, like, King Ghidorah's always been one of the main baddies, and, like, he's, like, but obviously when, you know, just times, the heads are just kind of going up and down, and they're kind of, like, puppets, kind of, and, you know, it's just of its time. So it is what it is, but still, I still loved it. But after seeing this King Ghidorah, I was like, whoa, that is amazing. It looks so good. He rose up, Godzilla met him face to face, clip over. It's like, you know, it's the perfect teaser clip. I thought it was really, really well done. And then, director was talking about how they actually taped three, motion actors together so that each of the heads can have its own personality, which you can actually tell really, really quick that how well it was done. And then, the cast of Shazam came up, Zachary Levi, Mark Strong. I don't remember their names, but I don't remember right now. At the top of my head, the kid in the film, what are their names? Asher Angel, that's what it is. And then Jack Dylan Grazer were there. And, I mean, it seems like any room that Zachary Levi's in, it's just going to be full of energy. And that seems to still be the case. Just because, I mean, just lit up the room, had a really good time. There was a good amount of Q&A. And then, we got to see some clips of the film, you know, and it looks like it's going to be another win for DC. So that seems like whatever they're doing, don't stop doing it now, because it's working pretty good. And then I think the last panel that I want to talk about that I went to, because I think I only went to one more panel, and that's just the way my Sunday worked, was a screening of Batman versus Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. We did the press room before, and that was really good. And then the movie was actually done very, very well. A really good balance between Batman and Ninja Turtles. And one of the main questions that I had asked was how do you take a villain like Shredder, who is in charge of the Foot Clan, and then you bring him with a villain like Ra's al Ghul, and how do you balance that out? Because they both want to be the top dog. There's no working with anyone else. It's them and then everyone else below. And, you know, how do they handle working with each other with so many people looking up to them? And so I think that was very well balanced. And then also, I mean, the Turtles are going to add really, really awesome comedic relief. And then also the relationship between Damian and the Turtles, really good. And just really well balanced, fun animated film. Is it going to, I mean, it's going to knock people over? No, it's just fun. So, that's my, that's for some of, yeah, it's pretty much a lot of the panels I went to, because I was very, very busy.
Yeah, it was definitely a really busy con. I didn't actually go to that many panels. Like, I had a lot of panels that I kind of wanted to go to, but it was a situation where every day, like, all the panels I wanted to go to were all crammed in the middle of the day. Like, even spotlight panels, like Tom King's spotlight panel was at the same time as Liam Sharp's spotlight panel. It's like, come on, man, like, spread that stuff out. You know, there's crossover with fans of both of those creators, right? Like, I just think you've got to do a better job of scheduling. So that was really disappointing. But Friday, I went to, I think only one panel on Friday. I went to the Now's a Perfect Time to Read Valiant panel. And I actually recorded that panel, and I'll be releasing that soon for all you Valiant fans. And it was a great panel. It was a lot of fun. Vita Ayala was on the panel. Joshua Dysart was on the panel. And they just talked about their love of character And Emily Hecht, one of the PR people at Valiant, had a slideshow and then went through talking about some different series, Bloodshot, Exo Man of War, the upcoming new Rise series, Livewire, obviously, Life and Death of Toyo Harada. So, again, it's always great to see Valiant people, especially the West Coast Valiant crew, who are good friends of mine, just fans that have of Valiant that have become, you know, friends and just good friends even. And there was a Valiant panel every day. The Valiant panel on Saturday was kind of like how I broke into comics, and Vita and Joshua Dice Art were again on that panel, but I didn't get to go to that one. And then there was a Bloodshot panel on Sunday, but again, it was at the same time as Liam Sharp's panel, so I didn't get to go to that one. So I had a feeling that I might have conflicts for Saturday and Sunday, so I made sure to make that panel on Friday and get to that one. Then I got to go to half of the DC Celebrates 80 Years of Batman. I didn't get to stay for the whole thing. Actually, you know what? I take that back. I did go to another panel right before the Batman 80th anniversary. There was a panel, and the only reason I went to this panel, I mean, the topic's whatever, right? It wasn't like this great, profound topic, but it just had a lot of really, really cool people on the panel, so that's why I decided to go. So it was, if you could have a superpower, what would it be? Or what's the best superpower, I think is what the panel was called. And Liam Sharp was on the panel, Amy Chu was on the panel, Vita Ayala was on the panel, Tom King was on the panel, and Scott Snyder was on the panel. So I only went to that panel because, other than Amy Chu, who I've never met, all the other people are friends of mine. So I just wanted to go and just kind of hang out and hear him talk about, you know, comics. And so, yeah, I went to that panel and then walked over to the Batman 80th anniversary panel with Scott Snyder. Had a great conversation on the way there. And then I got to hang out and see half of that panel before I had to leave. I can't remember why. I think I had an interview with Cecil Castellucci at the DC booth to talk about Female Fury. So I couldn't stay for the whole Batman 80th anniversary panel. But the thing about the panel that I took away from the time that I was there, because the moderator was Sam Humphries, and he was asking most of the creators on the panel about like their first Batman comic or when they first discovered Batman. And for a lot of people, it was Batman the Animated Series. When he got to Scott Snyder, he didn't ask him that. He asked him about Batman The Last Knight on Earth. And if you don't want to know anything about the story, I totally respect that. You're probably going to want to like fast forward for about 3 minutes, because I'm going to tell you about the fact that Snyder basically told us what happens on the first 11 pages. And it is insane. It's completely crazy. Basically what happens is there's like these giant white chalk lines that are appearing in like 30-foot sections all around Gotham City. And when enough of them show up, Batman gets like a satellite view. And what he realizes is these giant chalk lines are creating like a chalk outline, like you would see around a dead body. And the shape of the chalk line is Batman. And the heart is where Crime Alley is. So Batman goes to Crime Alley and he finds this 10-year-old kid there, this 10-year-old boy who's dead. I don't know if he's like in the preview art, he looked like undead, like zombie-like. But basically that's what happens. That's what he discovers. And then somehow he gets knocked out. And when he wakes up, he's in Arkham Asylum. And he's young, and he supposedly is crazy, and he's never been Batman. And like they showed some other panels and stuff, and he's like, no, I remember a bit. He thinks it's all a trick. Maybe it's, you know, the Joker. Maybe it's Hugo Strange, like somebody else messing with him that knows his identity. And Alfred comes to see him, and Alfred shows him the straitjacket that they put him in and safety helmet that they put Bruce Wayne in when they do electroshock therapy. And he's like, I'm tired of hearing about Batman. This is your Batman. And he holds this contraption up that they put him in. And the helmet looks like the bat cowl, right? And the straitjacket, you know, kind of has like a cape kind of thing. So it's like, yeah, this is the, you know, the reality you've invented because you're sick, because you're crazy. You know, ever since you killed your parents, you've been in here in this, you know, in this place, in a padded cell. and you've never really been Batman. So later Bruce goes back to his padded cell that night and he notices like a little rip in the wall, right? Because it's cloth. And he digs in there and out of the little rip, he pulls out a penny and a little toy dinosaur. So it's adding to that idea like, yeah, why is there a penny and a dinosaur in the Batcave? Well, because you somehow squirreled away this penny and dinosaur and you put it, you know, in your story, in your, you know, imaginative reality that says you're Batman. And so we don't know how, Scott didn't tell us, but he breaks out some way and he's in like this desert setting and he's trying to understand what's going on and he sees a lamppost in the distance. And when he gets over there, there's what looks to be like a lantern there. And when when Bruce like brushes the dust off, he sees that it's this like hanging jar that actually has the Joker's head in it. And when he knocks on it, the Joker like opens his eyes and starts talking to him. So that's like about the first 11 pages. It sounds really, really cool. I am a bit disappointed that they decided to change the format because it's Black Label. So, you know, a lot of the Black Label books are supposed to be that oversized format, and really looking forward to seeing Greg's work in that oversized format. But at the publisher's panel, Dan Didio basically said that all the rest of Capullo and Snyder's work has been done in that like traditional comic book size. And so for that reason, they wanted to keep this in the same format because there are people that are going to, like maybe there are people who only collect Snyder, Capullo, and Batman. And then this is kind of the end of their Batman story, at least for now. So they wanted to keep it all the same. So once Scott gave that rundown, like I said, I had to leave. And I even was almost late to my interview because I wanted to, you know, finish hearing what Scott had to say. But yeah, it was really cool. Then, like I said, I went downstairs. I interviewed Cecil Castellucci. And I also wanted to go to the This Is Your DC Universe panel. But I didn't get to go to that either because, again, I had an interview with Joshua Williamson about Flash. Just a really, really short one. But one thing that did come out of the DC Universe panel, and maybe one of the biggest pieces of news that came out of Comic-Con, especially if you're a DC fan or you're a big comic reader on a budget, or if you're already a subscriber of the DC Universe, and that's that the DC Universe app is moving closer to Marvel Unlimited in terms of using it as a comic reader. They are basically anything that DC has already scanned digitally that's available on other digital platforms, like and anything that's available on Comixology from DC is going to make its way onto the DC Universe app over the next year. So they're going to be adding over 20,000 comics to the DC Universe app. So in a way, the DC Universe app is becoming even more of a value than the Marvel Universe app. I think Marvel Universe app, or Marvel Unlimited, I should say, probably has more comics than 20,000, but it doesn't have any of the shows, right? There's none of the multimedia stuff. Whereas if you subscribe to DC Universe, you're getting not only classic shows like Batman the Animated Series or classic movies like Superman with Christopher Reeve, but you're also getting the original series like Titans and Doom Patrol and Young Justice. And on top of that, you have comics. You have, you know, DC's comics digital library, plus new comics that are coming out on Marvel Unlimited. 6 months after a comic hits stores, it shows up on the DC Unlimited app. DC's going a little further out. They'll put the stuff on there after it's been out for a year. So they're going to, you know, after a comic has been out for a year, in like on Comixology and you know, physical copies in the comic book store, then it'll make its way onto the DC Universe app. So, you know, if you're patient or you don't have the budget or you just aren't necessarily interested in something at the time, you know it's coming at some point. And I mean, 20,000 comics, it's going to take you longer than a year to read that anyway. So while you're waiting for a particular comic to show up, you can just read some of the immense library that's on there. So that's really cool. I think that's a big bit of news. I've heard a few people talking about it, but probably not enough people. So I wanted to mention that. I also on Friday had an interview with April Wallin, who is an author. That interview will be coming out later this week. She's an author, and she also won the reality show The Next Elvira. So she was really fun to talk to. Saturday, I started off by talking to Thomas Bilyeu from Impact Theory about his comic that was just recently released called Neon Future. And Thomas is a tech guy. He had a really interesting life story, kind of out of college, was out to just make a buck and then wasn't happy, kind of doing the grind and wanted to do something more meaningful. And he ends up starting this kind of nutrition company, and that nutrition company, like over a period of like 5 to 8 years, becomes worth like $8 billion or something ridiculous. I mean, this guy's got more money than, you know, he knows what to do with. And so what he decided was to keep going in that vein, right? You know, he created this company that gave a lot of advice about how to nourish your body and nutrition and that. So now he's trying to do the same thing for culture, basically, for ideas and for story, and to kind of improve our lives and make people happy. And so the interview is absolutely fascinating, talking to Thomas about how can you impact culture positively through story and through fiction. And so, yeah, Neon Future. I haven't had a chance to check it out. Bought a couple copies, including one that I had Thomas sign that will be given away on the podcast at a later date. So that was a really, really cool interview. Then just kind of hung around on the show floor for a little while. Again, wanted to make myself available for the contest. Then went upstairs again at 1:30 for the spotlight on Julie and Shauna Benson. It's always great to see the Benson sisters, and they had a really fun panel. It was interesting. Their panel was pretty well attended, but it was kind of all people that they already knew, just friends. So it was like a bunch of friends sitting around talking. And I wanted to record the panel, but unfortunately I was using a new digital recorder that I wasn't as familiar with. And I ran out of space because I didn't realize the space was limited based on some other factors and things like that. I'm not going to get into the technical details on it. But what's great is when I told Julie and Shauna, they're like, you know what? It's fine. We'll just come on the show in a couple weeks, and then we'll be able to do it, just the three of us, and it'll be better anyway. Because, yeah, the sound quality, these are big panel rooms, and so it was kind of echoey. So we're going to have them on at a later time. But, yeah, they have a lot of great advice about how to break in. You know, for them, people think that they came out of nowhere and like they're this overnight sensation. Well, they kind of are. They're an overnight sensation that took 12 years to happen. So they have a lot of great advice and a lot of great insight. So as soon as I finished that spotlight, I had to book it over to the Hilton Bar, which is one of the hotels that's close by, because I was meeting up with my buddy Cass Anvar, who plays Alex in The Expanse. He had a little bit of time for me and reached out to talk about the upcoming season 4 on Amazon, to talk about the way he's promoting it with a really, really cool contest that I'm not going to talk about here, but look for that episode later this week with all the details on how you can win some really cool Expanse stuff. Plus, we talked about his most recent role as Ra's al Ghul in the Batman versus Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles movie that Manny was just talking about. And then finally, whenever I see Cass, we always have to talk a little Moon Knight. I mean, if anybody who works for Marvel is listening, this is the guy who should be playing Mark Spector. It just makes sense, right? I understand Mark Spector's always been this Caucasian white mercenary from America, but, you know, Cass's heritage is Middle Eastern, and it just makes sense, right? I mean, Moon Knight is the avatar of the fist of vengeance of Khonshu, the moon god, who's an Egyptian god. It only makes sense to have Cass play this character. And so we talked about that a little bit as well, which was a lot of fun. But unfortunately, because of that interview, I didn't get to go to the DC Meet the Publishers panel. By the time I got done with Cass and would have got upstairs, the publishers panel would have been almost over. So just hung around for a little bit on the show floor, and then I had to get to my Rob Liefeld interview. He was there signing for fans and meeting fans, and Rob is maybe the most energetic person in comics. And he was one of those creators that ran the gauntlet, like I was saying, like Todd Knock and Kyle Higgins and some others who did the Emerald City and then Chicago Entertainment Expo. And and then WonderCon, you know, all in a row. And so we start off the interview talking about how tired we are, but man, Rob really didn't show it. And he is really excited and passionate about Major X. So I'm really curious to check it out. I wasn't necessarily planning on checking it out, but just based on the passion that Rob has for this story, I'm really interested. It did come out yesterday, as you're listening to this, on the 3rd. And I've seen a few reviews that said it was just kind of okay. Again, I haven't checked it out, so I don't know for sure. But what I would say to anybody who checks out the first issue and says it's just okay, keep in mind that Rob says this is like a big action-packed blockbuster popcorn movie, and you have to have a little setup. So the first issue might be kind of slow, but it's going to kick off and be big and bombastic and have, you know, the story has its roots in a lot of what is the 90s. So I would say, like I say with most series, you can't just base it on one issue. You've got to give everything at least two issues to see where it's really coming from. So again, and I'll talk more about it once I've actually read it on the podcast. So I think after that interview, I think I just kind of hung around on the floor for a little while. And then on Sunday, the only panel I did was the spotlight on Liam Sharp. And that was kind of cool because it was a first for me. I've been on panels before, but never at, you know, Comic-Con or WonderCon, which is run by the same organization. And unfortunately, the moderator, one of Liam's friends, Jeff Boucher, who's with Deadline now, I think it's Boucher or Boucher. Anyway, he was stuck in traffic, you know, it's LA. So Liam asked me to kind of fill in until Jeff showed up. And then, yeah, it was a really great panel. Unfortunately, it wasn't attended as well as it should have been. And I felt really bad for Liam. There was probably only maybe 15 people there. It was interesting that it allowed Liam to have, he brought some prints to give away, including a print of what's basically the cover of the Green Lantern issue that came out yesterday with Green Lantern and Adam Strange, which is really cool. And I almost wanted to grab one, but I also didn't want to carry a print around. And I also was like, no, the print should be for, you know, these fans. I can get one from Liam later. But yeah, I just felt bad because it was a really great panel, really informative, and a lot of fun. But there weren't a lot of people there. And like I said, the Tom King spotlight started at 12:30, and so there was that overlap there. Otherwise, I think Liam would have had a lot more people show up. So if you ever have a chance to meet Liam, he's absolutely amazing. He's one of my favorite humans. And yeah, like I said, I just felt bad for him. So. That was it for me in terms of panels. There were a few others I would have liked to get to, but again, it was just one of those things where it takes you off the show floor, and you know there were so many people that I hadn't had a chance to talk to yet, so I felt like, well, sitting in the panel room, not always the best use of my time. And the other part is I wanted to make myself available for the contest so people could find me. So yeah, all in all, it was a really good time. Trying to think of other interviews that I did there. If there was anybody that I interviewed that I didn't mention. I don't think so. I think that was about all the interviews I did as well. Did you have any other interviews that you wanted to mention, Manny?
Yeah, actually, that's not a bad idea. I think I'm not sure why, but I skipped over the fact that I did get to interview a lot of the cast for Justice League versus the Fatal Five, which is a really interesting story for them to, I thought to tell. But one of the interesting things I learned during the interviews is that it was a last minute decision to insert the Fatal Five and to tell that story specifically. And overall, just trying to pull up who was on that.
Well, yeah, you got a chance to meet Cass for the first time.
Yeah, probably that was one of the most entertaining spots when it came to the Batman versus Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, because it was him and it was Man, where is it? I'm trying to find the
You know, you can go to IMDb, right, and just pull up the cast list.
Oh, here it is. I was looking for. Okay, so they're running late because the screening started at a certain time, and we were still talking to them. So they put Troy Baker and Cass Anwar, and I mean it was just a really good time because like they didn't even realize how far off they had gone. They just kept talking to each other and having the conversation. And that at one point they actually apologized and were just like, no, continue, just do what you do. Because I mean because there was three round tables, they actually put them all together and we all kind of huddled around almost like children and just kind of crossed our legs and listened to them talk. But the interesting about Troy Baker is that he's voicing Batman in the film, and he's also the voice of Joker in the same film. So apparently that's the first time that ever got done. But yeah, Captain Marvel, voice of Ra's al Ghul or Ra's al Ghul. Did you know about the difference in the names and how they're both applicable?
Are you asking me?
Yeah.
Yeah, I've heard that before, that either is correct.
Yeah, that was interesting. That you know they actually had to clear that up because somebody was corrected, and that was pretty embarrassing. But other than that, I mean, we also had probably one of the most interesting people to talk to. Not that anything less of anyone else, but we got to talk to Andrew Kishona, who was the voice of Shredder. And man, this guy he's half American, half Japanese descent. He really, really knew his Shredder and was really able to answer some really deep questions about Shredder and his personality and why he would be a certain way, his attitude towards Ra's al Ghul, his attitude towards Batman, Turtles, motives, and things like that. And I think those were some of the most interesting 15, 20 minutes that we got to talk to anyone. And so that was really really interesting. One of the things that we found out when we talked to Marley Halpern Grazer, the screenwriter, was that there's no Master Splinter in the movie, no April, no, and this is all because pretty much the Turtles have traveled to Gotham, and this is a universe, or this is a world where Batman and the Turtles exist on the same planet, which I thought was a really interesting approach. So we'll see if they decide to go the other way and have Batman and some of his Bat family travel to New York, which sometimes is the same place as Gotham City. Sometimes they're next to each other, depending on who you ask. So that was good. Friday, though, I got to sit with the Holy Trinity of the Justice League and Justice League Unlimited, Kevin Conroy, Susan Eisenberg, and George Newbern, who you know their voices as Batman, Superman, Wonder Woman, because most people I know that's the Justice League they grew up with. And of course, that's the Bat voice that most people recognize the most. So it was really cool to have them all together. And it was interesting to see their take on some of the younger actors, voice actors who were coming in to do their lines, and at the same time how it fit in with the film, being that there were other members of the Justice League, younger ones that were coming in, like Miss Martian, who was voiced by Daniela Bobadilla, who was very awesome too. She talked a lot about the same things, how it was working with the old guard, not only as characters but also as voice actors. And so that was really interesting. Philip Anthony Rodriguez giving us this insight on a character like Mano, which I mean, to be honest with you, Matt, we talked about it, we and some other guys in the press room. I mean, I'm not the biggest Legion of Superheroes fan, so I know very little about some of these damn characters. The only reason I even knew who Emerald Empress was because of the Justice League Suicide crossover they did a little while back, and she was one of the characters in that. that story. But as far as Mono, as far as some of the other guys on that team, the Fatal Five, I had no idea who they were. So it made it interesting to talk to them and say, hey, how did, you know, get into character? How did you find out more about him? And, you know, same thing. I mean, with Thomas Collar and Starboy, I knew very little about him up until the events of Justice League and things like that, where he's becoming more prominent. So made it for interesting interviews, because they're kind of outside the box questions that you don't necessarily ask in time because you're so familiar with the characters, and that was not the case this time. Because, I mean, you can only ask Kevin Conroy so many times, you know, what is it like to play Batman? So, yeah, it was cool. Sam Liu also, talked to him a few times already, so it was cool. Bruce Timm, I don't think I ever talked to him. I think I talked to Paul Dini last time, on the other film. So, yeah, it was pretty fidgety, but it was pretty cool.
I can't believe you know Mono. I mean, the guy's name is Hand, and his power comes from his hand, and he has a picture of a hand on his chest. He just owns it. He owns that.
I don't know who came up with these characters, man, but they're weird. There's that guy with the brain, and he shoots lasers. I know you really like Legion of Superheroes, so I'm not gonna bag on them too much, because that's not a conversation I want to have. So, really cool. Really good time. It wasn't an interview, but I did have a chance just by dumb luck to run into, Van Didio while he wasn't doing much. He was just at the DC booth. And, we talked a little bit about, Detective 1000. Congratulated him on that milestone, and also on how cutting he was for Batman turning 80 at the same time. And then so the conversation actually really spun more about how they got to do it the first time with Action 1000, and they were so happy with the results that they immediately started working on Detective 1000. But because of them already doing one, they kind of had an idea of how they wanted to do this one. And it was, and it's a lot faster, a lot easier. And they got to do a little bit more than what they did with Superman. So that was pretty cool. I never thought that, you know, I'd have just a chance to sit back and talk with Dan Didio for a few minutes. But yeah, I guess that's kind of normal now, right? It's just so, strange.
Yeah. I talked to Dan too, but we talked to baseball. And then I realized after, I walked away, I was like, oh man, I wanted to talk to him about Black Label. But I kind of found out what I wanted to know based on the publisher's panel. But yeah, I didn't get a chance to talk to Dan as much as I wanted to. Every time we ran into each other, we were both on our way somewhere. And we're like, okay, we'll catch up later. And then we just kind of never got a chance to. So anything else you want to say about interviews, Manny?
No, not interviews. I think that's it about interviews.
Okay. Yeah. Again, I think that's it for me on interviews too. I just want to give a shout out to some of the people that I got talked to. Vita Ayala already mentioned. I went by their table later in the day on Sunday and just talked to them for a little while. And they're such an amazing talent. And the end of 2018 was very exciting for them, and I'm looking forward to more of their work this year. And they're willing to come on the show anytime that we want to have them. And so that went both ways. I told them, hey, the door's always open, and they said, well, yeah, reach out to us anytime. So I'm sure they'll be on at some point too. I mentioned Jen Bartel already. It was great to see her and talk to her. Last time I saw her at New York Comic Con, she was super busy, and I never got a chance to really talk to her other than just saying hi. And like the day before New York Comic Con started was when Blackbird, the first issue, just came out. And so getting a chance to talk to her and tell her how much I love the look and feel of the story. I feel like it's the most stylish comic book out there, beautifully colored. And so she was very gracious and appreciative of that. I mentioned a great conversation with Scott Snyder that I had. Also, Greg Capullo. Ran into him a few times here and there, one time in the hotel. We had a nice quick conversation. It's always great to see not only Greg, but also his wife, Jamie, who's just a total sweetheart and completely supports him 100%. One of the really great couples in comics. Another great couple in comics, Todd and Don Knock, we got a chance to see and talk to. And they're always great. So gracious with their fans. I got to talk with Jerry Dugan very briefly. We've been trying to have him come on the show for quite a while. That's more my fault than anything. I mean, Jerry's really busy, but he'll make the time. But it's just us finding the time to talk to him. Tom King, always great to see. Showed him that amazing commission I had that was kind of inspired by his tweet. And when I told him what my plans for the sketchbook, he, in true Tom King fashion, turned to me and just said, I love you. You're so effing crazy. Got to talk to Jim Lee for a few minutes late. I think Jim and I were both half asleep in one of the hotel bars on Saturday night. It's always great to see him. He's always so gracious and generous at this time. For fans, got to say hi to Greg Pak briefly. Talked about having him on again at some point. Congratulated Peter J. Tomasi on Detective 1000. And I was kind of picking his brain on sort of fan reaction. And he was letting me know that the fans are very, very excited to see what's coming soon in Detective Comics in terms of Arkham Knight. A lot of fans are very excited for that. And as far as Pete himself, what has him most excited and what has me most excited, it turns out to be the same thing. We both can't wait for the Brad Walker art. Obviously, Pete has seen it already. I have not, but you know, Brad's a friend and his art is absolutely amazing. I own several original pages of art from Brad, and Batman's one of his favorite characters, and this is really a dream come true for Brad to draw Batman. So can't wait to see the pages for myself, and even more than that, see the fan reaction. That's going to be really cool. Talked to Ryan Benjamin, had a really good conversation with him about having him come on a Webtoon Wednesday and talk about his Webtoon Brothers Bond. And we also talked about giving back to the next generation. And Ryan has some ideas about that in a program that's coming up that he'll, if we can have him on soon enough, he'll talk about. Also saw Kyle Higgins. He was another one that ran the gauntlet. And not only that, he's got another convention coming up this weekend, a Power Rangers convention. So he was pretty tired. And Kyle actually messed up his knee, like, toward the end of the summer last year playing basketball. So he's still struggling with that, but still getting out there to conventions and stuff. So it's always great to see him. He's I feel like a very underrated voice in comics that more people should know. Had a great conversation with Aaron Lopresti, who we've been really enjoying his work on Damage. And we're going to have, Aaron wants to come on the show, but he wants to time it right. He wants to come on to talk about his creator owned property. Whose name escapes me right now. It's Kit something Space Ranger. I can't remember the last name of the character. Also, I mentioned Sam Humphries. Got a chance to talk to him. He was only there on Friday, but got him to sign my Dial H for Hero. And stupidly, I forgot to have him sign my Blackbird. Like it totally just spaced. I mean, I know he's the one that writes it, so I don't know how I spaced on that. But anyway, talked about how great Dial H for Hero is and the reception on that, but also talked about how things are going over at DC Universe. He's really enjoying being on the show, and it's always great to see Sam. He has such a love of comics and a love of the medium. So, like I said, it was great to see him. It's Kit Carter, Space Ranger, by the way, for Aaron Lopresti's title. Saw John Boy Myers, you know, and I tweeted this out the other day. I don't know that there's a more positive person in comics. Like, he always has a big smile. He's always excited when he sees me. And it was great to catch up with him. I met Marco Santucci for the first time, who's sharing the art duties on Shazam with Dale Eaglesham and his wife. And they were just so amazing. They'd been to the U.S. before, but not to the West Coast. And so they had a great convention. And I picked up Marco's art book, which was absolutely amazing. Got him to autograph for me. And Marco's wife wanted me to tell everybody that he actually is Mr. Mind. Like if you look at that cover on 3, when you see Mr. Mime with the big eyes, that's because Marco has these big round glasses that he wears, and he just wants to control everybody. And if he could, he would put little mind-controlled radio-shaped devices into everybody's ears. And his wife wanted me to let everybody know that. So there you go, Maria. I told everybody. And Marco was okay with that because he's I was like, is that a secret or no? No, it's true. Even Marco admits it. So also saw Alex Sinclair, who we're going to have on the show soon on a Superman Sunday. It's always great to see him. We've been talking about having him on for a long time. New York Comic Con, I think he had mentioned to me about wanting to come on. But, you know, scheduling and all that kind of stuff. Charles Soule, saw him as well. Talked to, really looking forward to his next novel and the next thing he has coming up in comics. He's got something with Scott Snyder in the works, collaboration there. So looking forward to that. Also saw Scott Williams, who we mentioned is doing a lot of his own pencil work these days. Most people know him as the kind of Jim Lee's personal inker. So it was great to see him and talk a little art process. Stranger Comics, saw all the guys over there from Stranger Comics, including Sebastian Jones, congratulated him on the HBO deal that recently went through, where HBO is going to be creating some Stranger Comics content for their channel. And there's even rumors that HBO has bought Stranger Comics, kind of the way Netflix bought Miller World, but that hasn't been confirmed yet. So I'm sure we'll know more when Phoenix Comic Con rolls around. Phoenix Fan Fusion or whatever the heck they're calling it these days, and we have Sebastian back on the show. Also got a chance to talk to Dave Johnson. Him and Dan Panosian have the Drink and Draw YouTube channel going on right now that they're trying to promote, so we'll probably have Dave on do some sort of a crossover thing at some point as well. So it's always great to see Dave. I don't know him that well, nowhere near as well as I know Dan Panosian, but getting to know Dave better, and we had a really great talk. Also met Katie Cook face to face. I've seen Katie at shows for years. She always has a giant line, and so I've never had a chance to really talk to her. But you know, we recently had her on Webtoon Wednesday, actually the very first Webtoon Wednesday. And so I promised her next time I was at a show that she was at, I would go and introduce myself. And so I did. And even though she was super busy, she was very gracious and happy to see me. And yeah, she had I wanted to get something for my daughter, but again, giant line all the time. I saw the girls from Hex Comics. It's always great to see them. Really consider them kind of family at this point, even more so than just friends. They're absolutely amazing. So catching up with what's been going on in life with them was pretty amazing. Also, Ryan Parrott, who writes Volition and Overon for Aftershock, as well as the Power Rangers books. I think he writes Mighty Morphin Power Rangers over at Boom. He went out of his way to send me a message on Saturday to make sure we met up face-to-face. He's been on the show a couple times. We really hit it off every time he's been on. We have a lot of the same sensibilities. So he wanted to be sure to meet face-to-face as well. And I was running around so much that I had forgotten that he told me he was going to be there Saturday. So if you're listening, Ryan, thanks for hitting me up and reminding me. It was great to meet you face-to-face. And one of the things that we talked about, that Ryan and I talked about while we were there is, I was like, yeah, we'd love to have you back on. He's like, well, Power Rangers is about to blow up. And I'm, you know, unfortunately, Power Rangers is one of those things that came along at a time in my life where I didn't see any of it, right? I mean, the Power Rangers show was a little campy, a little goofy, and it came along when I was right around 14 or 15, and that's when you, like, completely reject that kind of stuff, right? So I've never even seen an episode of Power Rangers. And he was talking to me about how the interesting thing about Power Rangers is that the core concept is really cool. And if you take away the camp and you just elevate it just a little bit, it becomes this amazing science fiction superhero mashup. And that's basically what they're doing with Mighty Morphin Power Rangers. So I forgot to tell you this, Manny, but what Ryan wants to do is do an episode with the three of us. So Ryan, you know, obviously writing Power Rangers, you much more familiar with Power Rangers, and me, like the, I don't know Power Rangers at all. And you and him would kind of talk Power Rangers, and I would be kind of the point of view character into the world of Power Rangers for any of our listeners who are like me and completely ignorant of it. You know, so you and Ryan talking about Power Rangers and me going, wait, what's a, I don't even know, like Freakazoid? What's the big bad called? Isn't it something?
Freakazoid.
Isn't it something called Zoid or something?
Because it was a great animated series by WB, by the way.
What's it called? What's the big... Isn't it something Zoid?
Rita Repulsa and Zed. Lord Zed.
Maybe that's what I'm thinking of, Zed.
I thought it was... The red one?
I don't know what they look like. I just remember hearing the name. I thought there was some kind of Zoid. Something that ended in Zoid that was like one of the Power Rangers, like Rogue's Gallery or Nemesis or something like that. But I could be Megazoid. Is that? Am I getting Power Rangers mixed up with something else?
Oh my God, Jay, stop.
What?
Just stop.
I mean, are you caught up on Power Rangers from Boom?
No, not completely caught up. But are you talking about the Megazords? Are you talking about
Megazord? That's it. Not Megazoid. Megazord. That's what I was thinking of.
Okay, I have a Dragon Zord on my mantle. I'm staring at it right now.
Okay, well, have I been to your house? No. How would I know that? Anyway, yeah. So we'll have to talk about that. We'll have to make that happen. And I'm sure there are other people that I'm forgetting. But apologies for anybody that I didn't shout out because again, we saw a lot of friends, a lot of creators, a lot of listeners, and it was a really good time. Jeff Pena, saw him, talked to him. I mentioned Scott Snyder. Also had dinner with Joshua Dysart and Dinesh Samdasani and some friends. It was great to see
Dinesh. Favorite writers.
Had an absolutely amazing conversation with Dinesh, and he's got a lot of plates in the air, and that guy's not done. You're going to be hearing from him again sooner than later. And then, of course, dinner on Sunday night with Liam Sharp and Constance and her husband Paul was another highlight. It was a nice, relaxing, as opposed to the dinner on Saturday night with Dinesh and Josh, which was somewhat boisterous and kind of suited the middle of the con feel. Dinner on Sunday was much more relaxing and was exactly what I needed to kind of recharge my batteries before that long drive home. So
it was a really strange dinner on Saturday night because I noticed that half of the table was having a very seldom and very calm conversation about things in the future and you know, plans and all this other great stuff. And then the other half of the table was ridiculously goofing off. And you can only imagine which side of the table I was on. But luckily, I mean, oh my God, I've never hung out with Josh back, you know, for dinner or anything. So it was a very, very nice change of pace to know that he was just so easygoing.
Yeah, and he's led an interesting life for sure. So
yeah, every time every story ended with no, that's the most Joshua Dysart thing I've ever heard.
No, the next story's the most Joshua
Dysart. Yeah. So I mean I can see why. I mean, he's you know, with him doing Imperium and now, you know, Life and Death of Toyo Harada, like just a lot of that stuff. So be able to, I mean, who does that? Who gets to have dinner with one of their favorite writers? It just doesn't happen. I'm very, very grateful for that opportunity.
You're welcome.
That's my way of saying thank you.
All right. So, listeners, Manny just sent me a picture of the, is this Mega, what'd you call this thing?
That's the Dragon Zord. That's the one that belongs to Tommy Oliver.
Tommy Oliver.
The Green Ranger. He summons it from the oceans with the flute.
Is that the one that Jason David Frank plays?
Correct.
Okay. See, I know a little bit, only because I've interviewed Jason David Frank before. So this is, I thought this, what did you call it again? The Megazord?
The Megazord.
Megazord?
Yeah. So, well, in this case, this one's the Dragon Zord. I'm about to get lynched on social media because I called it a Megazord. No, this is the Dragon Zord.
Okay,
the Megazord.
Go ahead.
The Megazord is the one with the other five Rangers combined: Sabretooth Tiger, Mastodon, Triceratops, Tyrannosaurus.
Wait, so I thought the Rangers were just like martial artists that like fought stuff with swords. They have mechanical animals that fight for them, like kind of like Voltron.
Yes.
They get inside them.
Yeah, they get inside them.
I mean,
they combine. The only one that doesn't.
How do I
the one that doesn't combine is the Dragon Zord until later, because the Dragon Zord and Tommy were originally introduced as villains, and then And then they worked out, and then the Megazord would combine with the Dragonzord to form a new Zord.
So I'm thinking a Megazord is the bad guy, but Megazord's actually the good guy.
Megazord is the other Zord. I actually don't have it. I need to buy it, because actually if I buy the Megazord, I can actually combine the two. It's made in that way. It's pretty freaking cool.
Yeah, I know so little about Power Rangers, it's not even funny. All right, we're
Alpha 5, you know, it was remade, and actually I think they're going to continue it. So anyway, I can talk Power Rangers all day. I can talk WWE all day. There's a lot I can talk.
I cannot. So instead, I'm just going to mention one last group of friends that I ran into, or a couple friends that I ran into. Jason Inman and Ashley V. Robinson, got a chance to run into them. You know, we've done podcast crossovers before. We've had dinner before. We're of similar loves as far as Star Trek and comics and Superman and things that are nerdy and being podcasters and stuff. And it's always great to see them and talk to them. And they really remind me that there are good people out there in the comic industry that have their hands on a lot of different pies. You know, they're creators. They created Jupiter Jet. They have Science, their Kickstarter that fully funded that they're currently working on. And it's always great to see them. And so that was a highlight of the show as well. So with that, I think we're going to wrap it up, unless Manny has anything else to add.
Nope. I think we're good. I think we're still tired. And talking about it just kind of brought back some more tired.
Yeah, definitely. So we want to remind – oh, go ahead.
Oh, no. I do want to say just shout out to all the people who came up to us, because it's pretty freaking cool. I mean, we hadn't even gone through the doors on Friday when people were like, comic source? And we're like – we almost like looked at each other like yeah, do we owe you money? You know, it was, and then that person would leave, and they would say, "Hey, comic store," and we're like, "Whoa, all right, that this is, you know." So, and then I know that I in a press room said, "I'm with the comic store." Well, I'm with LRM at the comic store, and they're like, "Yeah, yeah. Oh, you guys are doing great things over there." You know, actually, so like, you know, just it's really weird because we put a lot of work in what we do. And to see that it's actually appreciated out there, it's pretty cool.
Yeah, there's no substitute for hanging out with it. Like John Paul, we should mention, John Paul was there, hung out with him a little bit, a listener who actually has been a guest on the show before, did our 700th episode with us, the best of 2018. So, yeah, I mean, just the fact that it's great that we do this, and we do it because we love it, and we want to get more people reading comics. And we get a little bit of interaction on social media, not as much as we'd like, probably. So sometimes you just wonder, are we doing this and it's just out there in the ether and no one's listening? But then you go to a show like, you know, WonderCon, and people come up to you, or they recognize your voice, or maybe they want to try to win, you know, the iPad, or they want to get a lanyard. And yeah, it's just awesome that people are taking the time to enjoy what we do. So, all right, I guess that's going to do it for this episode. Don't forget, it's been brought to you by the Nova Real Kickstarter, an amazing science fiction story about parallel realities, futuristic technology, an ancient samurai, and demons. Go and pledge now to get the whole story in this upcoming graphic novel. To discover the characters, realities, and worlds for yourself, be sure to click on the link in the show notes, or just do a search for Nova Real over at Kickstarter.com yourself. Like I mentioned before, I'm very impressed by what I saw when I went and explored the Kickstarter after they reached out to sponsor an episode. So, you know, I believe in it enough that I made a pledge myself. So only 4 days left, not a lot of time. Go ahead and go over there and check it out for yourself. And, you know, maybe you'll pledge, maybe you won't, but at least give it a shot. At least give it a try. Take a look. And if you do pledge, or even if you don't pledge, give it a shot on social media. These guys are putting their heart and soul into this thing, and it would be really great to see it succeed. So that's going to do it for this episode. You can find the Comic Source Podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, or whichever podcasting app you prefer. Please tell all your friends about us, subscribe, and rate us. The ratings really help with our visibility and our ability to reach new listeners, especially 5-star reviews on Apple.
Also, be sure to visit us at lrmonline.com to join the conversation, access the show notes, and discover all our other great pop culture content. If you want to email us, the email address is thecomicsourceblog@gmail.com, or you can follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/thecomicsource. Do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram to follow us on those social platforms. All three spots are great places to find out when we release new episodes, as well as follow all our convention coverage. So once again, we want to thank everyone for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.